The last month has been a relentless onslaught of crazy news stories, with the world seeming to be falling apart. We're going to take a look at the latest news and also discuss how Catholics properly fight for the truth while maintaining our peace in Christ. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host, editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, you know what to do. Smash that like button. Don't take it easy on it. Be weird. As the Kamala campaign would say, be weird and smash that like button. Subscribe to the channel, let other people know about it. Also, you can follow Crisis on social media at Crisis Mag at all the major social media outlets. You can also follow me on X at Eric R. Sammons. I post a lot of stuff there most days as well. Subscribe to our email newsletter. Go to crisismagazine.com, put in your email address, and we will send you an email once a day in the morning, usually 9 a.m. Eastern time, with our stories for the day. Okay, so let's get started. So I think we all know how crazy things have gotten in the world, particularly in America, over the past month. On June 26th, we were having a crazy election season. I mean, one of the people running for president, the front runner, had been convicted of 34 felonies. And, you know, he was being called literally Hitler. We had a president who seemed to not really be with it. But at the same time, there was no indication yet that it was that literally all hell is going to break loose very quickly. But then on June 27th, the debate happened, the first presidential debate. It was very odd being this early. I mean, I don't think there's ever been a presidential debate between two major party candidates before either of the conventions had happened, before either of them had been officially nominated. But yet we had one. And from the second Joe Biden walked out on stage, it was clear something was wrong. Like, most of us who have a brain cell knew something was wrong for a while. But it was awful. He clearly did not have the capability to even finish a sentence. It was a debacle on every level. And so the talk of replacing him on the ticket jumped to the fore. And then just a couple weeks later, on July 13th, and I've talked about this before, we see the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. Now, I know today, by the end of July, this has already been memory hold. It's this amazing thing where, I don't know if this is still true, but I checked it myself. Yesterday, if you went to Google and you typed in attempted assassination of T-R-U-M, so you're starting to type in, they always have their suggested, they have their dropdown of suggested searches. It was Truman, and Trump wasn't even in the dropdown list at all. So if you typed in attempted assassination weeks after an actual attempted assassination occurred, that assassination attempt doesn't even show up on the search results. They just completely scrubbed from their search engine any attempt to find information about the assassination attempt. We saw that, I think it was Meta's AI program. If you ask it about the attempted assassination attempt, it would actually say it was fictional. It didn't happen. And so we had this complete scrubbing of it. But it did happen. On July 13th, the former president of the United States, who was the front runner to become the next president of the United States, was shot in the ear. And yes, he actually was shot. We had the gaslighting from the FBI director. Maybe it wasn't a bullet that hit him. Maybe it was something else. And there's a significant number of people today who think either it was staged or he wasn't really hit by a bullet, as if that somehow would make it better. And so this is that just if that alone had happened, that would be insane. But then a week later, then we have the RNC convention, which is pretty normal by convention standards. Although from a Catholic perspective, there was some definitely crazy stuff going on there. You had the prayer to the false god and various things like that. But J.D. Vance was selected. And then Biden, though, drops out. Biden drops out on the 21st, I think it was, of July. In a very weird way. Like, it was just a letter posted onto Twitter, onto X, with a signature that didn't really match most of his signatures, on letterhead that wasn't a presidential letterhead, just a Joseph Biden on top. And then he doesn't endorse Kamala in that letter, but then a tweet right after that, he does endorse her. He, meaning the Twitter account, endorses her. But then we don't hear or see from him for a couple more days. And so just the whole thing was bizarre, and it gave rise to a lot of conspiracy theories, which frankly, I'm with them. There's just something was so off about this. It's just ridiculous that we have the president of the United States who's running for re-election decides to drop out a month before his convention after an assassination attempt against his opponent. And he doesn't even get on camera to say why he's doing it. Even after he had the thing a couple days later where he says that he is going to he's kind of saying to the camera that he's stepping down from the campaign. He doesn't ever actually say why. He doesn't say, I don't think I can do this or whatever. He just says I'm not running for president for re-election. And then he's just gone now. I mean, every once in a while you'll see him in public view, like they'll trot him out there, or somebody who looks like him, they'll trot out there on camera. But Kamala now is talking like she's running things. I mean, essentially, that's what it seems like what's happening. Now, I don't actually think Kamala is running things behind the behind the scenes. I don't think she's smart enough to do that. But at the same time, they're making it like she's in charge now, which, I mean, we do have a constitution in this country. I mean, as much as we've abused it over the past few decades, I mean, Biden is the commander in chief. He is the one who's in charge, not Kamala Harris. She's the vice president. Yet it appears that she's being seen as the one running for it. But if Biden isn't even able to run for re-election, how can he be able to run the country? It just makes no sense. So then after Biden says, I'm not running for re-election, we have the Kamala mania that all of a sudden just breaks out. Remember, the day before Biden stepped down, everybody knew Kamala was not an asset. She was a liability. Nobody wanted her to be the candidate because she is probably more unpopular than Hillary Clinton, if that's possible. She is extremely unlikable. She's got that irritating laugh, and she just seems dumb as a doornail. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Then the day after Biden says, I'm not running, I endorse Kamala. Now, all of a sudden, she is the second coming of the greatest, like she's JFK incarnate or something like that. She's Ronald Reagan, JFK all rolled up into one. And it's like everybody who said that Biden was just so able to be the next be president, now all of a sudden says, well, now Kamala's great. She's really the one. And so this Kamala fever breakout, and it's still going strong. And it's not surprising at all that she gets a bump in the polls after this happens, because I mean, that's just the way things work. But how long are they going to be able to keep this up? There's still people who say, a lot of pundits who say she isn't even going to be the nominee. That, I mean, I kind of think that what's happening is this is their test run. They're seeing, can we really rig things so that Kamala looks attractive, that she looks like she'd be a good president and people would vote for her. And if they can't make that happen in the couple weeks till the convention, then I think they dump her. I think they're going to be able to do that. And I think that Kamala is going to be the nominee myself. But we have a situation here where the nominee, the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party, not one vote was cast for her. Not one. In fact, she's never won a primary delegate in her life. Even when she ran 2020, it was such a disaster. She didn't get a single primary vote. A single delegate, I should say. She got votes. A single delegate. So this is a woman that's basically just placed here by the powers that be, by the Democrat elite. And of course, this is all done to save democracy. So now we have a situation where it appears that we have, on the one hand, a man who's a convicted felon, and they'll tell you that every 2 minutes, and was shot at, and actually shot in the ear. And then by in a situation, by the way, I've already talked about this, but in a situation that is so, so suspicious. I mean, I always assume incompetence, but it's hard to assume the level of incompetence that was necessary for this guy to get a shot off at Trump. So that's on one side. We have that. A man who is a convicted felon was shot, probably with help from the deep state. And on the other hand, we have a woman who's never won a single primary delegate in her life and was just appointed by the power brokers. That is going to be supposedly our election. Of course, we have a third party candidate, RFK Jr. And then to top it all off, just to make July of 2024 just even a little more crazy, we had the Olympic opening ceremony fiasco. I mean, what in the hell was that? And I use that word purposefully. What in the hell was that? I mean, because it was clearly from hell. We had the bizarre Marie Antoinette singing, a decapitated head singing with very satanic overtones. And I love how people say, like, oh, you don't know your history if you think this is satanic. No, you don't know your history because you don't think it's satanic. Because the French Revolution was satanic. The beheading of Marie Antoinette was satanic. So if you don't think a skit or whatever you call it of a beheaded Marie Antoinette singing isn't satanic, you don't know history. But here's the crazy thing. That wasn't even the worst thing about the Olympic opening ceremony. You had this bizarre drag queen Last Supper reenactment that some people try to, like, oh, not really Last Supper. It really was, you know, Dionysius or something like that, some Greek guy, whatever. But then, of course, the organizers themselves admitted the woman who was playing, who was in the middle, so she's the Jesus, the obese woman in the middle, she was saying it's a gay Last Supper. So it's a complete, you know, in France, the eldest daughter of the church, as I said on X, the eldest daughter of the church has become the favorite whore of the devil. They basically not just mock Christianity, that's one thing, but they go to explicit blasphemy against our Lord and offenses against God. I also thought it was funny people say, oh, well, it wasn't really against the Last Supper. It was against Da Vinci's painting of the Last Supper. What does that mean? I mean, Da Vinci's painting of the Last Supper was about the Last Supper. This is about the Last Supper. It was about the Last Supper. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Fortunately, there was a huge outcry against the Olympic ceremony, what happened there. But at the same time, it's just more insanity that shows where the world is, that there were a number of people, high-level people, who thought this would be a good idea. This would be something appropriate to the Olympic opening ceremony, that we'd have this complete subversion of the good, the true, and the beautiful with a blasphemous display that was also pornographic at certain points. And so that was, I mean, that's our Olympics now. That's the beginning of the Olympics. So we have that rolled up. And then also, just on the Catholic side in July, we had the constant anxiety that we might get something from Rome saying that traditional Latin masses are further restricted. Because we heard very good rumors in June that this could happen, although there was never a date set for it. But a lot of people thought it might be around the 3-year anniversary of Traditionis Custodis on July 16th. But nothing has happened so far. But that doesn't mean there isn't a constant anxiety. I know everybody I know who attends the Latin Mass, I mean, I guess if they attend the Society of St. Pius X, they don't have it. But they have a little low-level anxiety that, you know, I could get the news tomorrow that our Mass is shut down. And for a lot of Catholics, it's already happened. I mean, Austin, Texas, for example, and other places, the TLM has been shut down. So it's not just anxiety for them that it might happen. It already has happened, which gives the rest of us an anxiety. I don't know about you, but I think it's hard. I think it's been harder the last month, particularly, to keep a sense of peace. I mean, I'll just be honest, because I hammer home all the time about the fact that we need to be balanced in our life, that we need to pray more than we're on social media, that we can't get too consumed by the news. I mean, I know I'm the editor chief of a magazine named Crisis. So I'm aware of the fact that the world is often in crisis and that we need to address that. But there's no question that doing that can cause a certain level of anxiety, a certain a level of, like, spiritual malaise within the soul. And so that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today, was this craziness. How do we deal with it? Because we're not quietists. Like, basically, we just go into our corner and pray and we never think about it. We just ignore the world. But at the same time, I don't think we should be these crazy activists who are jumping the thick of things all the time and never having time to pray and receive the sacraments and things like that, or that's just a side part of our life. I think that's the real challenge for faithful Catholics today. And so what do we do? I mean, I'll give you what I think. I think obviously we need to have a certain balance, but I think first of all, we cannot succumb to the idea of, I'm just going to ignore everything. I have a temptation towards that, to be honest, personally. The idea of, okay, I'm just going to kind of worry about mine and my own. I'm going to worry about my family, my parish, my community. And that is our primary responsibility. Subsidiarity applies to the individual. My primary responsibility is me, my family, my parish, my community, not something on the other side of the world. In fact, I just said yesterday, you know, there's news now, just to add to July's fervor, that Venezuela's election is somehow been stolen by the socialists, but there's also indications that maybe it's just the CIA, another plot to get their own person installed. And so they're kind of making this up. I mean, they've done it before, all the color revolutions, that maybe that's what's going on in Venezuela. Here's the thing. I don't care. I know that's going to sound harsh. Like, oh, how can you be Catholic and not care about the sufferings of others? Well, obviously on some level I care. I don't want anybody on earth to suffer. The problem is, though, I can't let my level of caring about what happens in Venezuela really impact me. That's one of the problems of today's world, actually, is that we know too much. Think about it. 200 years ago, you're living on a farm in Ohio. You have no idea even what's going on in California. And you don't care. All you're worried about is your own world around you. And that's what you can focus on. You put all your energy into your family, your community, your city, your town, your farm, whatever the case may be. You don't have to spend any mental energy on what's going on in California or New York or, heaven forbid, over in Paris or something like that. Now we know about all this stuff. We know about what's going on in Venezuela, or we pretend we do, because I don't think we really know what's going on there right now. We see what's going on in Paris. We see what's going on all over the world, and it adds to our stress and anxiety. I do think there's a Catholic case for not caring beyond just a general compassion for others. Because I don't have an obligation to care for people who I can do nothing for, especially when it goes against the people I do have an obligation towards. So obviously we care for our neighbor, and our Lord made very clear who's your neighbor. And it's basically everybody. But at the same time, there are levels of obligation we have towards them. So if, for example, my kids are starving and I have no money except for maybe $20, and I give $20 to my neighbor so he can take his kids out for ice cream, that I'm doing a terrible job as a father, because my own kids they're my closest neighbors. Likewise, if I'm doing okay and my next door neighbor's really struggling, but somebody on the other side of the country is struggling with something, I have a greater obligation to my next door neighbor. That's who God has put into my life. And so I need to spend my money, but also my energy, my mental energy, on my next door neighbor over somebody over there. And so the same thing with Venezuela. You know, maybe at some point it's going to matter to us, but honestly, I think it's just a matter of, it's a distraction, and it's something we have to take care of our own home before we can go out and help others. And usually our help for others, like in Venezuela, it just makes things worse. Because here's the thing is, it's the neocon strategy that what you do is you give this story about how awful it is somewhere, and you pull on the heartstrings of Americans. Look at these innocent, these suffering Venezuelans. But their solution is always, now we need to get involved. And then what happens? It gets worse. We do it all over the world, and now we're doing it here. We're going to do it here is what it looks like. So what was my point? Anyway, my point is about this part is that we do need to get involved in the world and making it a better place. What we need to do specifically, we can't just put our head in the sand. What we need to do specifically depends on our state in life. A consecrated cloistered nun has different responsibilities than a father, than somebody who is perhaps a politician or a business leader, something like that. They all have different responsibilities. But we do have to do our part. And so I do think we need to resist. Like, for example, the backlash against the Olympic opening ceremonies was a very good thing. You saw the progressive Catholics, like the America Magazine types, being like, oh, you guys are so like thin skinned. How, you know, you just get insulted and you go all crazy. No, this was an insult to our Lord, not to us. This was an offense against God, not to us. And yes, we do. We should say something about offense against God. That's one of the primary things that we should do. It's a first commandment type of thing. So yes, we should make sure we make it known. No, like for example, if you have family members watching who are Christians, particularly, and they're watching the Olympics, and they talk about you, you can just say, I'm not going to watch the Olympics because of the blasphemous ceremony, opening ceremonies. I just don't want to do something to support that, to make them think that maybe we shouldn't be promoting this after all. I mean, I saw like Catholic, professional Catholics, whatever you want to call them, which I know I technically am one too, who were talking about, yeah, you know, yay Olympics, all that stuff, even after the opening ceremonies. What would they have had to have done at the opening ceremonies to make you want to boycott it? Would they have to sacrifice a virgin on like a pagan temple? Would you have then boycotted the Olympics? I think you probably wouldn't. You'd find some way to say, well, you know, we still have to support the Olympians who work so hard to get there, or something stupid like that. No, we don't have any obligation to support the Olympians. I feel bad for the Christian Olympians who obviously had no part in this. But like, I don't have any obligation. I have to support them with like my viewing. No, I want to make sure it's clear. I'm not going to view something that literally starts off with a pagan display, an offense against God. So as Catholics, I do feel like we have to be in the world. We have to be fighting against these things. So in the political sphere, whatever your state of life is, whatever your sphere of influence is, yes, we should be working towards defending the rights of the church, particularly defending the rights of the unborn, defending the rights of the poor. This is something we need to be doing. I mean, I've made it very clear my own views on the upcoming election that I am supporting Donald Trump, because I feel like he will do the least worst against the church. I mean, we know Kamala is very anti-Catholic. We know what she's going to stand for. She's going to go against the church. You know, RFK, he's got his issues, but you know, like we know he's not going to win. Donald Trump at least will mostly leave us alone so that we can raise our families, we can promote the faith, we can be faithful Catholics. That doesn't make him like a perfect candidate by any stretch of the imagination, but it does help us to at least look at it from that perspective. So yes, so we need to be involved. But here's the thing. We need to check ourselves. This is where I think we can run into a problem. And this is what I'm talking about, my own anxiety that's grown this month that I need to put in a check. And I think we all need to. We need to make sure we recognize the priority of things. Like I was talking about the priority as far as like, I have an obligation more to my family, for example, than to what's going on in Venezuela. Well, that's also true in how I spend my time. So if I'm spending time on social media looking at all the details about Venezuela and it's taking me away from my kids, time with my kids, there's a problem here. There's a real problem here. That priority has to be to my family. That priority has to be to prayer, to the sacraments. If you're not going regularly, you know, you're obviously going regularly to the sacraments, mass at least once a week, confession at least once a month, praying every day for at least, I would say, an hour. That's obviously a foundation. I also think we have to know ourselves as far as how well we can follow these things on social media. Yes, there is such a thing as outrage porn. There is such a thing as, you know, just going on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, whatever, just to get outraged. And it gives you certain like a dopamine hit and all this stuff, gets you anxious. We have to know ourselves. How much can we handle and be really truthful about it? And I personally, I have my thing. I don't go on social media on Sundays because I just need a day off from it. And I feel like that's the Lord's day dedicated to him. But here's another thing I want to mention is we have to live real life. I think that's the number one way we keep that balance. We have to live real life. What do I mean by that? What do I mean by live real life? What I mean by that is most of our time should be spent, most of our free time at least, because if you have a job where you're online, you just can't help it, I know. But we should be spending a lot of time in real life with our family, with our friends, out at the park, outside tending the garden, riding our bike, going to, you know, going out with friends, doing things like that, where we're actually interacting with real people, or we're interacting with, excuse me, with real nature. We're actually out there. We're not just simply living online and following the news. And that's the only thing that we have to, that's the only thing we're thinking of. We got to be living real life. I think that's the key is, so the balance is, yes, we are engaged with what's going on in the world, but at the same time, we're embracing the good, the beautiful, and the true in life itself. I think that's what we have to do. We have to do both of those, you know, kind of keeping that balance. And I think, by the way, I think things are actually going to be crazier. I mean, July of 2024 has been crazy, but I actually think things are going to get crazier, because the fact is they're not going to allow Trump to just win. We know that. And so something's going to happen to continue to, once Kamala's bump kind of goes away and Trump is again, you know, looking very strong like he was before the debate and before the assassination attempt. And then after the assassination attempt, he looked even better. So once he comes back, that comes back to normal, they're going to do something else. I mean, literally, there are forces, and I believe this to be true, that tried to assassinate him. So don't think they're not going to try something else crazy. So this is almost more of a warning that going forward, if we want to keep our own peace in Christ, we want it, but we also still want to fight for the truth. We have to keep that balance. Yes, we fight for the truth when we can. We live in real life, and we really focus on our own sphere of influence the most. Okay, let me go ahead and, I got some good questions and comments here. Let me go ahead and pull those up. Again, this is something I want to tell people when I do the live stream like this, which is what I usually do on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern time. We're going to go through some of the chat, the live chat, and I'll kind of address it here at the end. So I encourage you to jump on the live chat if you don't normally. YouTube's probably the easiest way, but I think you can also do it on Facebook. And I believe on Twitter, although on Twitter, you can't really get in the chat as well. Is recognize and resist actually considered rad trad now? Probably not. I mean, rad trad, of course, is just a slur, usually how it's used, just to say, okay, these people are not trads like me or something like that. Like, I don't really care that much for the label, but I don't care if somebody calls me that. But, you know, the way things are going with more and more people going, louder and louder voices, I should say, are becoming sedevacantists or something like that. Recognize and resist seems kind of tame in comparison, doesn't it? So I guess we're the normie trads, semi-trads, or something like that. The videos about Trump's assassination attempt have all the YouTube fact check banners about Reagan's assassination attempt. Yeah, I mean, the thing is like Trump's assassination attempt has already been rewritten in history. Like everybody was saying right afterwards, oh, you know, that iconic photo of him holding his fist up with the American flag behind him. People were all saying right after it happened, this is going to be in history books forever. I actually remember thinking, I don't think it will be. I think they're going to scrub it. And I think that's exactly what's happening. I mean, Facebook literally had it scrubbed for a little while before there's enough pushback that they were like, okay, we'll show it. Okay, why we have a rule here. Anthony's comments are not allowed and will not be addressed. So we'll just skip that one. Our bishops will continue to be silent. Yeah, that is the problem, is that our bishops have been way too silent about a lot of stuff. Now, I will say that. Okay, I say that. Okay, let me go back to that. Our bishops are continue to be silent. That is true. I will say, though, there has been some very good Episcopal pushback to the Olympic opening ceremonies. Yes, I know that's somewhat of a not that hard to do, but Bishop Barron had a couple videos where he was very, very strongly against it. But also there was Bishop Olson. I think he's Fort Worth. He actually was very good. He put something on a post on X where he said that it's not about a mockery of the faith or disrespect. He said it's about an offense against God. That's what I think people need to realize about the Olympic ceremony thing. It's not a mockery or disrespectful. That doesn't even come close to what it really was. It was an offense against God, and we need to defend that. Now, people, when they hear that, they think, oh, God is like, you know, some offended teenager who's just like his feelings are hurt because, you know, somebody said something bad about him. It's not what we mean. What we mean is you went against God, who is your creator and is rightfully due all our reverence and our worship. That's an offense against God. And we have to, Catholics, we have to fight against those. Kamala is a post-Roe female candidate running on the most pro-radical abortion platform ever. That's why she's polling well. I think that it's true that pro-lifers are in the minority, like real hardcore pro-lifers in the minority. We don't win. And we don't have, it's not a winning strategy to say, I'm going to outlaw abortion. I mean, that's going to lose you election in almost, in most places and definitely nationally. That's just the reality. And Kamala is definitely 1,000% pro-abortion. But that's not why she's polling well. I mean, because Biden was 100% pro-abortion as well, and he didn't poll very well at all. I think it really is just a created, like a manufactured support right now that we're going to see what happens in about a month if she's still going to be just as popular. Okay, Scott says, thousands of Fed agency personnel fear being jailed if Donald Trump wins. Makes sense now. Remember the Russiagate hoax, deep state stuff. I think, Scott, you're right. I mean, I think that's exactly right. Here's the irony. In my opinion, I don't think Donald Trump will do that. I think Donald Trump will improve things on the margins, but I don't think he's going to all of a sudden jail a bunch of federal agents. I mean, he might call to account maybe a few high-ranking people, but there's no chance that, you know, just Joe in federal agency X is going to get jailed if Donald Trump becomes president. But that's not what matters. He thinks he is going to be. He's been convinced that Donald Trump, when he takes over, he's going to abolish all elections. He's going to set up a dictatorship. He's going to fire and possibly execute all these deep state people. None of that's going to actually happen if Trump wins, but that's what they think. And I think that's why they will do anything. Scott also said, Marine Le Pen's Patriot Coalition is doing better than ever in French politics. Don't confuse French TV with real life in France. That's a good point. I mean, France, I mean, I do think France, the fact that they had this, I mean, I think France has been lost for since, you know, 1789 in a real sense. But there's a very strong traditional community, Catholic community in France as well. I mean, alongside America, it's the strongest place for traditional Catholics. So I it's not to say, when you say France has fallen or it's awful, that doesn't mean everybody in France is awful. And it doesn't mean there's not a certain pushback. The reality is, though, the right, the what they call the far right in France did not end up winning in the end. So it's not, you know, can't be that great. So, okay. Female Casey Royals fan from Nebraska. I go to the FSSP, so I don't have as much anxiety. That makes sense because they've seemed to be safe for now. Right now I'm concerned about where we would have to have an alternative site if we lost a chapel, which the FSSP, you know, goes in. So I think that makes sense that, like, I think anybody who goes to a traditional Latin mass, again, I'm not talking about society people. There's reason for anxiety just because most fraternity parishes, for example, and institute parishes are owned by the diocese. So if the diocese wanted to, they can kick them out. You are there by the pleasure of your bishop. And we all know a new bishop could come in who could be more of a Francis person that could make things worse. So there is anxiety for sure. Alex says, we should take up space and stand for our faith in public. Yes, I agree with that completely. I can't remember if I did a podcast about this or it was just an article where I talked about how at the Pride Parade in Cincinnati last month, there was a group of strong Catholics who went and they prayed to they had images of the Sacred Heart. We prayed reparations prayers to the Sacred Heart right there next to the Pride Parade. I think that's what we need to do. We need to make it very clear we're not going away, that we are Catholic, that we stand for what we believe in. It might end up meaning martyrdom someday. Or more outright persecution. I don't know, but we have to do that. But here's that's the balance right there, Alex. I think you bring this up, is that taking up space. We go there in real life and we resist things like the Pride Parade. And we do that after we've been in prayer and close to the sacraments. I would argue that if you are not close to the sacraments and have a deep prayer life, you shouldn't go to something like a Pride Parade and pray. Those who have been to something like Pride Parade or really in front of an abortion clinic with a lot of pro-abortion people there, you know there's a demonic influence there. There's definitely, you feel the demonic presence at these places. There's just no question about it. If you are not spiritually prepared, you really shouldn't go. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't go. That means you should get spiritually prepared. But I think that's what we have to have, that balance of being spiritually prepared, because things are getting worse and worse. I mean, it's very clear they're getting worse and worse. And I think we just need to do what we can to resist it, but only after we're spiritually prepared. Okay, Epirose 1 says, I got mailers that RFK is actually a progressive Democrat because he's for abortion rights. RFK is an interesting thing because I know people don't like it when I say this about RFK, but I like him. I know he's pro-abortion. I know he's a big, you know, kind of old school Democrat, big government on lots of things. Don't get me wrong. I know all these things. However, I do think on some issues, he does look at them deeply. He really does consider them, and he comes to some good conclusions. I mean, obviously on the whole COVID vaccine stuff, a lot of the health, the chronic health issues we have, I think that RFK really is, you know, thoughtful and good. And I would be happy if, for example, if Trump wins, if he put RFK in certain positions in his administration. Obviously I wouldn't want him in something that would influence abortion policy or something like that. But if he was something about the chronic health or something like that, I think that would be great, to be honest. The question is, who will RFK take from? Will we take more from Biden or Trump? I really don't know. I do think a lot of people who vote for RFK wouldn't have voted for either Biden or Trump, no matter what. I don't think he necessarily takes from one or the other. So we'll have to see, though. Okay, I think I'm going to wrap it up here. I appreciate the questions and the comments, by the way. I do enjoy doing that at the end, and I just encourage people to do that in future episodes. The world has gone insane. July 2024 has been crazy. There's a really good chance the coming months are even going to be crazier. So I would just encourage you, pray every day for at least an hour. Go to the sacraments on a regular basis. If you're not Catholic, by the way, and listening to this, become Catholic. I honestly believe that's going to be your best way to survive, so to speak, in the coming craziness, is to be Catholic. So if you're not Catholic, find a Catholic parish, go to their inquiry classes, their RCA, whatever they call it, and become Catholic. If you want to know more about that, you can just email me and I'd be happy to answer some questions for you. So those of you who are not Catholic, become Catholic. Those who are Catholic, be strongly practicing Catholic. That's the only way we're going to survive. It's the only way we're also going to win. Now, I don't think we're going to win tomorrow, but ultimately the victory is ours. But the only way we do that is we stay close to Christ and we stay close to his graces, and then we can resist the evil that's going on in this world. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up there. Until next time, everybody, God love you.